America, and welcome from a very soggy, swampy Washington. And I'm not talking just about all the political corruption and ethics and follow the money controversies we have in the city. It actually really rained here a lot. We've got this tropical storm that came through today, and we're canoeing down our streets. It's a lot of rain, a lot of water. Makes it feel even more swampy than normal in D.C. Thank you for joining us on John Solomon Reports. We've got a great show today. I'm going to skip my normal monologue and do something a little special. We did some really great investigative work at Just the News overnight. My colleague, Seamus Bruner, you may remember him because he came on the show a couple days ago to talk about the book he and I co-wrote, Fallout, the Russian nuclear bribes, Russian spies, and Washington lies that enrich the Clinton and Biden dynasties. He helped me research all of the amazing facts in that book. Well, he's been following the money in the racial justice sphere. We've got Black Lives Matters. We've got, all the outrage over George Floyd. We can go back to Ferguson. We can go back to the Florida shootings. Well, one persistent figure on television, on the front lines of politics, has been Reverend Al Sharpton. And we took a look at his tax-exempt nonprofit charity. And it turns out, well, he's getting a lot of money on the side of this charity. As much as one in every $8 that goes to the charity went into Al Sharpton's pocket in the last tax year that we have records for, 2018, a fourfold increase. The guy paid himself seven figures out of his charity in 2018. What seems like the business of racial justice is a pretty lucrative business personally, at least for Al Sharpton. We compare that to some of the other great figures in the racial justice sphere, and you'll find out that Al Sharpton is, well, above average when it comes to how much he's putting in his wallet. That's a great one, so we're going to stay tuned in a second. We're going to have Seamus Bruner here. Also, Congressman Andy Biggs, the chairman of the House Conservative Caucus. He replaced Mark Meadows, who obviously is now President Trump's chief of staff. He's here to talk about school reopenings, and will we ever see indictments in the John Durham investigation, and so much more. All the dysfunction going on inside of Congress these next couple days. Congressman Andy Biggs is going to bring us up to speed on all of that. But first, we're going to go to a commercial break. Remember, please support our sponsors, our advertisers. They're wonderful people, and they make what we do at Just the News, the investigative work you're about to hear from Seamus Bruner, and the great podcasting and interviews we get to do on John Solomon Reports. We're so grateful for these incredible sponsors, these incredible supporters. And if you want to support us, the best way to do that is to support them. Buy their products, subscribe to their services, let them know that you love them for loving us. All right, we're going to go to that commercial break like promised. When we come back, Seamus Bruner and the very cash wealthy trail to Al Sharpton's wallet. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000, or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, my co-author in the recent book, Fallout, the bestseller on Amazon, we're very proud to welcome back Seamus Bruner today. Seamus, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you, John. Thanks.
Well, we're so appreciative that you're doing so many great things for us here at Just the News. So this morning, I want to just set this up for our listeners. We had a great story by Seamus that went through the tax records of Reverend Al Sharpton's nonprofit racial justice organization. And you found something pretty unique as the since Ferguson, essentially, Al Sharpton's been getting a more and more lucrative compensation package each year. What'd you find out?
Yeah, that's right. So we went to, all the way back to 2003, pulled the National Action Networks. That's Al Sharpton's 501c charity, non-tax exempt entity, 501c4. And back in 2003, Reverend Al Sharpton was making just $93,000 a year, pretty modest salary. 2006, he made $4,000, and when he was doing his presidential runs, he took no money. But then he kind of settles in 2009 at $250,000 a year. And for the next 5 years or four, let's see, 5 years from 09 to 13, he's making $241,000 approximately. And then we see a huge spike after the year 2013. And that is really when the Black Lives Matter movement was founded, in the wake of the Trayvon Martin shooting and the George Zimmerman, especially after the George Zimmerman acquittal, is when this Black Lives Matter movement was founded, the hashtag Black Lives Matter. And Al Sharpton really shows up at a lot of the funerals for these are tragic incidents with these young men and women who are, in some cases, it's not all of the deaths were at the hands of the police, but really Al Sharpton made that his bread and butter. From there, making $250,000, he jumps up 70% to $40,000. And by 2018, his salary is over $1 million. And it's just a really, really sharp increase. And it kind of tracks along with the National Action Network's rallies. They hold these events. He is at, with Spike Lee and others at these rallies, kind of, shouting about the injustice. So we looked at other charities as well, comparable charities. We've got Reverend Jesse Jackson's charity. We've got MoveOn.org, and another one that the executives are just not paid nearly as much as Reverend Sharpton.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, right? I mean, you go through and take a look at some of the other leaders in the racial justice space, and Al Sharpton is two, three times larger in compensation. And so it's a reminder to us all that when we see someone on TV and they're doing something that feels nonprofit and good in nature, and Al Sharpton obviously has been a fixture in certainly New York politics for 30, 40 years, national politics certainly for 10 or 20 years, there's a component that we often don't see unless we go and get these tax records, these 990 tax records. And that is, at least for Al Sharpton's case, being for racial justice is also good for his wallet book, his wallet or his checkbook. These are big numbers. I mean, when you get $1 million compensation in 1 year, you're in the category of, corporate CEOs. That's what, two times what the president makes. And four to six times what lawmakers make. So, what did you find out, as Al Sharpton's salary was and compensation was growing? It looks like his group was also getting a lot more, donations. This has been a good time for him in the fundraising sphere as well, right?
That's right. That's right. They talk about it on the website, the National Action Network. Another record year just within these last few years, another record year of fundraising. So they were pulling in, right around $4 million in the 2009-10 range. And that has jumped up to nearly $8 million in the last year available, which is 2018. And Reverend Sharpton's been very active on the George Floyd Memorial Service circuit. They had the five ceremonies, and he was at least at two of them delivering a eulogy. So it's they're on pace to probably have another record year in 2019 and 2020.
Now, I became a journalist because I wasn't good at math, but let's do the math here quickly and see if I got this right. So his fundraising went up double, but his compensation went up 4x. Is that right?
Exactly. So the 7 million is that's a lot of money for a nonprofit, but there's many nonprofits that make much, much more, and their executives aren't paid nearly as much. So you're right. The revenues to the National Action Network did not quite double, nearly doubled, but his salary went up four times. So his salary is going up much higher at a much faster pace than the National Action Network's.
It's a good business if you can get it, I guess. That's quite a compensation package. In the last year that we have visible so far, they have not filed or made available to the public yet the 2019 tax returns, right? So we're looking for that. But 2018, which would have been filed last year for the tax year purposes, is there any explanation why it jumped, you know, from the 400,000 or 500,000 range to a million there? Did they throw any sweeteners in last year?
Yeah, so it's a little gray where all the money comes from, but it's the New York Post did a good report on how the National Action Network actually paid Al Sharpton for the movie rights. They paid him $500,000 in 2018 for the book deal and movie rights to his life story.
Have they made that movie or written that book yet?
Reverend Al Sharpton is worth this much money. But it's, you know, it's not clear if or when they'll ever see a return on those rights. So that was another chunk of cash that went to Reverend Sharpton. It's not clear if that's part of his salary or if that was actually an additional bonus, which if it were a bonus, that would be, you know, even higher than a million.
So, and to date, we haven't seen that book or that movie. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So he gets an advance on a non-existent book, at least as of now. Because it's 2 years since that payment was allegedly made, and we haven't seen that movie from the movie rights. So these are the sort of things that we try to do at Just the News, which is to go through documents that most people don't have time to go through, the 990 tax returns and other documents that organizations like Al Sharpton's file. When you look back at this now, how do you think this will play, this revelation will play, first in the Black community that has held Reverend Sharpton to such in great revere for many years for all of his activism, and then in the larger NGO world, I mean, do people just yawn at these salaries now, or is the compensation of not-for-profit players becoming more and more concerning?
Yeah, I think we as Americans of all backgrounds are very suspicious of, you know, people with their hands in the till. People on the take, that goes for politicians and for nonprofit directors. I mean, people think, you know, if it's a nonprofit, if it's a charity, you're supposed to be working for the good of the people. And when they see someone making over $1 million a year, I mean, no one in these communities that Al Sharpton is going into and delivering eulogies and speeches and really, I mean, he's a divisive guy. He's on MSNBC. He's always accusing, you know, the other side, conservatives, of being racists. When somebody's getting rich and he's going into these communities where nobody makes $1 million a year, I think it has a distasteful feel about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's what will be interesting to watch over the next couple of days. Will people dig in? And are there other things to learn about how he does this? I mean, basically 1/8 of all the money that was donated for racial justice to Al Sharpton's group went into his pocket. I mean, that's just to put that in perspective. And so that's a big percentage of overhead for a single figure. And obviously his organization relies on his personality, I'm sure, for fundraising and for activism. But in a charitable world, that seems to be, well, quite charitable for Al Sharpton's personal wallet. So Seamus, thank you for joining us. First, thank you for doing the great work that you're doing at Just the News. We're so lucky. You are, I've said this in the last time you're on the show, one of the greatest investigative reporters I've ever had the pleasure to work with. And being able to, you know, take on these Herculean tasks that other people don't want to go through, all the tax records, you know, that's tedious gumshoe work. But you help us create a form of transparency, and we are so, so grateful.
Well, it's a pleasure, John, and just a little teaser for your audience. We're going to keep following the money to Sharpton. We got a tip to go check into the amount of money he's actually given to the families, if any. And so I think there's going to be a few more really interesting bombshells in the Sharpton world coming soon.
I think that's great. Listen, this is old-fashioned watchdog journalism. Follow the money. Hold people accountable. That's why these tax forms have been made public. And we requested the Al Sharpton 2019 at least 5-6 days ago, correct? That tax form?
Yes, yes. It was over. It was now. Today is the fifth day. So if we don't hear back, They may have, under the law, to meet it by today, correct? They may have gotten to filing time here in 2020 for the year 2019, and right as COVID hit, now they're maybe delaying the filing. So they may have an excuse, but we'll be sure to update the audience when we hear back.
That's great. That's old-fashioned, steadfast journalism, following the money and staying on it. So, Seamus, again, thank you for all you're doing for Just the News. I know all of our listeners at John Solomon Reports are thrilled to have had a chance to hear from you firsthand how you put this story together, and we'll be on this cash front looking for more follow the money stories. So thanks again. We'll be right back in a few minutes, folks. We're going to go to commercial break, and then we will have a surprise guest, the head of the conservative wing of the Republican House is joining us in a few seconds, Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss that interview. You know what, folks? Stress may be why you can't lose weight. If you've got moderate to high stress like I do, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement called Lean could be your solution. Chronic stress wreaks havoc on blood sugar, which can cause your body to store excess fat. Stress can also slow your metabolism, which fuels weight gain, and you know all about stress eating and sugar cravings, right? Now the good news. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Now, if your life is a bit stressful like mine and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Now get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com. That's takelean.com and enter the promo code JustNews15. That's the promo code JustNews15 at takelean.com. One more time, takelean.com. Statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and it's not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest indeed, Congressman Andy Biggs returns to the show. Congressman, good to have you back.
Thanks, John. Good to be with you always.
Well, we're so grateful you're joining us. I know how busy it is up on the Hill, but I've been watching your Twitter and your TV appearances and your press releases the last few days, and you're really drilling down on the crisis that is awaiting Americans' family, grandmothers, parents, children who aren't going to get back to in-person school this fall. Tell us what you're learning and what concerns you most about the dynamic you're seeing in the public school systems right now.
Well, there's so much to get at, John. I mean, on the personal level, I talk to folks, you know, where sometimes it's the grandparents, sometimes it's the parents, and actually sometimes it's the students themselves. They want their children back in schools, and they want them to learn. They feel like that there's already been delay. And parents have told me, said, you know, without that structure, it's harmful to the kids, and it really is. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatricians has talked about that as well. So I hear this from the parents and grandparents and from students, but I also see it in the data that's out there. For instance, in Arizona, we now have an increase in our suicide hotline by over 100% in the last 2 months or so, which is something I suppose you could expect. We've seen increased uses of drugs and alcohol. Domestic violence is spiked here, just gone way up. And a lot of that is the school thing. So when I start looking at the schools, and by the way, John, just so you know, the unions here are giving a six-day primer on how the teachers can try to put pressure on the governor to not reopen schools, including fake obituaries, etc. But what I really think is, this is an opportunity to just say we're going to empower parents, and we're going to put the money that we would normally give to schools, $12,000-$13,000 per pupil, and we're just going to say to each parent, you get the choice, because there are charter schools that are ready to open in Arizona that want to open, there are private schools that want to open, and there are even schools that have had success with some virtual success that want to open. And they're fighting this entrenched battle, and you know that it's clear the risk is greater outside of school for children than it is being in school.
Yeah, that's really the part of the argument that no one is talking about, right? Everyone's got the COVID fears and the teacher fears, but The longer they stay out, the worse the risk is. Now, today, I saw Dr. Anthony Fauci saying there's no reason we can't open the schools safely. Does that give you some confidence that at least there's a voice now joining President Trump on the medical side trying to push this?
Well, since it's Dr. Fauci, it makes me wonder if I should rethink my position. But I shouldn't say that. I'm just joking.
I know you're not a big fan. I know.
but the reality is, doctors have been saying that, and scientists and research have been saying that literally for months now. And right. And so we've got to understand that literally CDC has said the case fatality rate of a youngster with COVID is literally one in a million, and that is less risk than a normal seasonal flu. They're at less risk of transmitting the disease. They're at less risk of actually getting the disease and having any kind of serious complication. And that is the data. That is the science. And so for Dr. Fauci to come along, I wish you'd have been there 2 months ago, 3 months ago, when we were really foreseeing that we need to be moving this way. I'm glad he's there. But the arguments against this basically are saying it's gone from, let's make sure that the risk is mitigated and this is that we're good to go, to making an argument that we have to have absolute safety where no one will ever catch this COVID. It is impossible to do that. We need to face that fact and assess the risk of keeping kids out.
Yeah, no, that's really it. You had a tweet a couple days ago, and I'm going to paraphrase it because I can't remember verbatim, but it was something to the effect of it's time to lead with science and data and not fear and misconception. And I think that that's the part that it's so interesting, particularly the television, maybe the television networks do this, but the data shows an extraordinary safe scenario for children in schools. And yet you would never tell if you turned on CNN or MSNBC or, you know, the nightly news that data is so clear. How do you go around the media? How do you cut through some of the fear mongering that's going on and get these decisions made on science and data and not on fear mongering?
Well, we do what we're trying to do. Like, I'm talking to responsible journalists like yourself right now who respect the science and the data. We put it on our social media. I do my own series of podcasts. I contact government officials trying to get them to see and look at the data. Their own data, by the way, John. I'm not making my
That's
own
right.
data up. I'm taking
it's not
their
your own data. It's their data, right?
Yeah, this is what your data shows. I mean, so if most of your teachers in Arizona, which they are between the ages of 20 and 44, they might catch the disease, but to have a serious complication is just slightly more than nil. The case fatality rate for those folks is also far less than a seasonal flu issue. So, but they don't want to hear that. And there are ways that you can mitigate the risk. And so what we do is we just preach almost like a one-note piano wherever we can, whenever we can. Say, look at the data, look at the facts. And then you see some weird things. I mean, like the Dutch head doctor, I don't know if you saw this morning, he came out and said, look, we've determined that masks have no effect on slowing the spread.
Yeah.
Let's have the debate. I mean, I've asked, let's not just have Fauci and Birx up there. Let's bring in some other doctors who are considered well-known epidemiologists, virologists, who can come in and actually provide a different interpretation of the data. And that would be really good.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, which is that we haven't allowed, there seems to be a censorship of anyone's voice that isn't the towing the line of the prevailing advice, which, by the way, from our CDC and our NIH and Dr. Fauci has flip-flopped maybe 7 or 8 times over the course of this crisis. But I think dissenting voices, and especially when we don't know as much as we don't know about COVID, it seems like dissenting voices or other voices would be helpful than the monolithic up and down advice we've been getting from our own government. It's a really interesting, dynamic, the censorship that's going on. You've talked a lot, and I know as a conservative, you really worry about this dynamic that's growing more and more about government picking winners and losers. And I think in COVID, you've really begun to see that. You see You know, a church can't open, but a Walmart can with twice as many people. Or, you know, protesters are okay to have their protests, but you can't have a haircut. What do you think? What is the what's driving these sort of winners and losers sort of approach to regulation of COVID, and how do we reverse it? If you're concerned about it, if you're a libertarian like yourself and you care about civil liberties, how do we get out of the this rut that we're in with you know, locking people down?
Well, you really put your finger on one of the biggest issues here, and it's a constitutional crisis, and that is the kind of the tyrannical approach that an authoritarian approach that some of these governors and mayors have taken, and they have identified certain businesses. I mean, the marijuana dispensary stays open, but by golly, you can't go to church, as you said. You can have a riot, but you can't have a worship service. And certainly you can't go to school. In fact, in Arizona, one of the most interesting contradictions is we're not going to open up in-person schools, but since we've got a lot of kids who will have no place to go as parents begin to start going back to work, we're going to open up the schools to effectively be kind of a daycare. They can the kids can come there, but they can't be taught. I mean, so that's a weird dichotomy.
Wow.
And so
That sure is. That's a head scratcher.
it's a head scratcher. So, what I'm seeing, and this is important because this is happening in Arizona, you're seeing these folks that are being discriminated against taking their cases to the courts, and that sometimes that's all that's left. And so, you've got businesses that are that where owners are losing everything. Maybe they've mortgaged their house or leveraged their retirement to open a business, and then they're told they've got to shut down, but you know, they've got bills to pay, they lose employees, they lose their business, and they're banding together and they're taking these odd dichotomies, these situations, and they're bringing lawsuits. Sometimes they're
Right.
losing,
Right.
but I think some of them are winning throughout the country, and that is one way. The other way is to keep preaching to my colleagues in Congress and at the state level, because a lot of these decisions are made at the state level, John, and advocate that these legislatures come in and try to intervene with legislative measures to rein in these inconsistencies, these tyrannies that are going on.
It's amazing. I was talking, I guess it was over the weekend, with a very Democratic, lifelong liberal restaurant owner, and he said that he was rethinking his own thoughts because, or rethinking his own values because he's watched the power of the state lock down law-abiding citizens, and then turn around and allow lawlessness in our streets. And he said if 1,000 people can burn and throw things at federal officers and tear down our city and paint graffiti on the White House, why can't I open my restaurant when I abide by the same restrictions as a Walmart that's allowed to open or something else? And that sentiment of the big state controlling law-abiding people and then allowing the lawless to run rampant over the town, is that a dynamic that you think everyday Americans are beginning to see? And how does it play into the election debate we're all going to have over the next 90 days?
Yeah, John, I think there is a strong undercurrent of that that's going on. Now, I recognize that I live and work in an echo chamber a lot of the time, but I do hear that from folks, and I'm hearing from people that normally wouldn't relate that type of thing to me.
Yeah.
I do hear, I mean, there's another side of it where people yell and scream at me and saying you're killing people because you want to open up the economy and et
Right.
cetera, and that's there, and I respect that they have the right to think that. But there's a bigger undercurrent, and it is coming from people like you just talked about. Restaurant owners in Arizona, we could lose 25 to 40% of all restaurants in this state because of the
Wow.
way
I
they've
mean,
been
gone
handling
forever,
it.
huh? Oh.
Yeah, gone for all time.
Oh
And
my gosh.
this, yeah, just think about that. And so people begin to look at that and they think, if you're in LA, I get calls from people from LA. Now I realize some of them may already be with me, but they're talking about, look, how does this work where you're letting murderers and violent criminals out on the streets so they don't get COVID? But if I go to a beach and I put my feet in wet sand, I can be arrested for violating governor's orders. Or how do you put black babies' lives matter? You're chalking that, and you can be
I was
arrested
just
for
going to
doing
ask you
that.
about that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's a tremendous undercurrent right now where people are doing reflection on what, how did we get to this spot? How did we get to this spot?
It is a remarkable moment, and I can only imagine what our founding fathers must be thinking, looking down from above. But for those listeners who didn't catch that last reference, there was an arrest over the weekend in the Washington D.C. by the Metropolitan Police Department of a couple of anti-abortion protesters who wrote in chalk on the sidewalk. So it's not even graffiti. It washes off with the rain. It's probably gone by now, thanks to the wash that we just got from the tropical storm, black baby lives matter. And they were arrested. Meanwhile, many of the people who spray painted the church across from the White House or painted the mural on the street called Black Lives Matter have not faced any such repercussions. And I think it goes back to this question that you were just drilling down on so eloquently, Congressman, the unequal protection. There's like two standards, one for everyday citizens and another for lawless rioters. And I wonder if that will come out in an election in ways that we're not yet prepared to see in the vote.
Yeah, I wonder that as well, because while I think everyday Americans feel that and they see that and they wonder what's going on, I think that there's this tremendous left-wing media presence, which the Democrats in Congress still refuse to acknowledge that what was going on in Chaz was a violent riot, or what, you know, that any of this was violent rioting. They're still calling these peaceful protests, John. I mean, and I think people who look at it, my favorite was when the CNN reporter, and there's a building going up in flames behind him, and he's talking about the peaceful protest. I'm curious to see how that plays out in the election, because I do think, getting back to Spiro Agnew, who coined the term a silent majority, I do think there's people out there that are cowed that there is a silent majority.
Yeah, I definitely see it in just talking. I was out in Wisconsin and Connecticut, two kind of blue-leaning states. Connecticut, really a blue state. Wisconsin, a purple state, probably, thanks to Donald Trump's win there a few years ago. And, of course, Scott Walker was a Republican governor for a long time. But there's just a general common sense frustration with this idea that there's a double standard in America. And they see it from everything. They see it from, you know, the difference between Andy McCabe and Mike Flynn. Andy McCabe doesn't get indicted for lying. Mike Flynn does. And it turns out that he hadn't even really lied materially about something the FBI cared about because they knew the answer. And then they see it in the streets. They see it in the churches when the church can't open, but a Walmart can. And it feels to me like this is an undercurrent issue that may just suddenly rear its head on election days in ways that we haven't seen. When I'm looking out now, and we've been watching almost every week, there's been a new bombshell revelation on the Russia case. And you've been an eloquent voice from the very beginning, one of the first lawmakers, along with Devin Nunes and Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, Lindsey Graham, to really focus on the amount of wrongdoing, the spying, the using of the law enforcement intelligence apparatus to carry out a dirty trick on a rival party. Do you have a level of confidence that at the end, before Election Day, that we will see the sort of accountability that will scare people off from doing this in the future?
Well, John, I remain hopeful, but cynical. Let me put it that let's just put it this sure. way. I believed a year ago that something was imminent, and I was told probably a year ago that any day now something will be coming out, and nothing ever has. And I just heard this a week ago that something is imminent, and I still don't believe. I know it should be, but it's not happening. And I will just tell you, if the mindset is now that, well, we've gone so far, and we're just a few months out from the election, that we should wait till after the election, that's as tampering with the election as much as releasing this now. You
that's
have
a great
to release
point.
This stuff because it's the truth. This stuff is the truth, and if you can't reveal the truth and bring the indictments out there that need to come out, then I don't even know why you do it. I don't know why they engage in this investigation. They have to bring it out. Let the chips fall where they may.
It's almost numbing to think we're about to have the 2020 election, and we still haven't punished the people who tampered in the 2016 election. And It's remarkable, especially because of the hard work that people like you and Jim, Jordan, and Mark Mez, you guys really fought to extract from a very determined bureaucracy, not to give up this information. You extracted these really remarkable revelations. I mean, it's not in doubt that the FBI was spying on Trump, and they were doing so because they got dirt from Hillary Clinton's team, and they knew the dirt was bogus, and they continued to do it anyways. It's not even in doubt anymore. It's in the open. When history looks back at this period and they look at this, you know, the era of Trump, and, you know, Trump's doing all these things that he promised to do. He builds the wall. He gets the economy roaring. The Republicans give an extraordinary tax break to Americans. And you have this extraordinary regulatory relief, which clearly excites the economy in ways that we hadn't seen in 10 or 20 years. You have all that going on. And then you have this all this foolishness going on the other side, where you have riots and you have impeachments that don't go anywhere, that are predetermined to fail, and then a fake Russia collusion scandal. How will history look back at this window of time and judge us all for what we've just been through?
Well, I think they're going to be somewhat bemused and condemnatory, actually. I mean, because I think in the future, people looking like us, when we look back, we say, you know, you have things going well, pretty well. It's not perfect, but why would you tank all that? Why would you use the government to try to move to a more socialist government? I mean, let's just face it, this, John. Ultimately, this was done for power and to reshape the country. When I say that, I'm talking about the spying on the Trump campaign, etc. And I think that history is going to judge us and pretty harshly. I think they're going to judge us as an America that was complacent. We let our materialist ideas, which I don't condemn that. It's just that we get complacent. We just got so complacent. We let people who wanted to submarine our ideals actually attack those ideals. And I think they're going to be somewhat befuddled by it. They'll laugh a little bit about it. At the same time, they'll be pretty condemnatory toward us.
Yeah, I think that's probably right when we look back. I want to get your thought on just a couple things that are kind of pending and a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen. Do you see another COVID relief package coming through, and how concerned are you by the price tags that are being talked about?
I do think that there will be something that comes out. I'm extremely concerned about the price. I don't think we should do any more spending on this. There's still, according to a report recently that I saw, there's still $1 trillion from the last one that hasn't been distributed. I don't know how accurate that number is, but that it was pretty accurate source. So that may be true. And if that's the case, and even if it's not the case, the best thing for our country right now is to open up our society, restore freedom, and instill responsibility with freedom. If we do that, I just got to believe that we're going to see the economy take off. I think people are going to maintain health. I think we're going to go forward. But if we continue to spend another couple of trillion, which, by the way, John, that's kind of be the low mark, in my opinion, about $1.5 to $2 trillion, you're going to be sitting at a gross national debt to gross national product ratio that is extremely dangerous, you know, where you owe far more than you can bring in. And
I think we're looking at, if you add that 1.5 trillion, we'll be pretty close to 30 trillion in debt. Yeah. And we have a GDP of what, about 22, 23 trillion a year. So there'd be a $7 trillion gap between what we make across the entire U.S. in a year and what we owe long term. That's a scary thought for people that are at least accountants and budgeteers, for sure.
Right. No, absolutely right. And another set of economists that I was talking to about a month ago said they're projecting a $2.5 trillion structural deficit for next year as well.
Wow.
So you add that to it, you're looking at potentially $32-33 trillion by the end of next fiscal year in national debt. And that's, you know, these things are absolutely unsustainable and really, really have ramifications for our children and our grandchildren. But if the interest rates, if for some reason it impacts our sovereign, our currency, we're the national current or the international currency of exchange. If that gets affected in some way seriously, you might see an increase in the cost of the debt that we've been running up, and that cost will begin crowding out virtually everything else in the national budget.
That's such a great point. And also at some point when you get that level of debt, interest rates become a real problem, right? Because if you have any bit of inflation, all of a sudden the debt service that the U.S. government has to pay goes up. And so it could allow our enemies to foist a financial crisis on top of us now that they've foisted a medical crisis on us. At least certainly China did. Really, yes. Remarkable time. Congressman, I can't thank you enough for all the time you spent with us today and for bringing us up to speed, particularly on the battle to get our schools open, because that is the number one issue as we head into Labor Day. One last question for you. As you look at the election now, I read a lot of things that Republicans are scared out of their wits. They think this is going to be a bad election for them. What do you feel about the election, about Trump's reelection chances, about what's going on in the great – you got a great Senate race with McSally in your own home state. How, when you look at this, how's the election going to play out if you handicapped it today?
I think President Trump is going to win. I think he's going to win that. I think that we keep the Senate, and I think we come back in the House. I think we take some seats in the House. If we win the majority, it's going to be just by a couple of seats. If we don't get it back, it's just going to be by a few seats. I think it's going to be very close in the House. I think there's a lot of races I think there's a lot of races people just aren't paying attention to where we've got great candidates, and we just have to punch through. We got a lot of great candidates, and we've got a lot of great candidates in very difficult districts. But we have great candidates in some districts that we probably can win. There's a good chance we can win. It's going to be very close. I'll just say that.
That's fascinating. So what dynamic is it that makes you more confident than all the gloom and doom that you read in the New York Times every day in Politico? I know there's been a really great effort on registration by Republicans, right? Pennsylvania, I think Republicans have registered 3x more than Democrats have in new voters. Are there dynamics that the media is missing that you see as a, you know, someone who's in the game of politics? What are the Republicans doing that the media are missing right now, the pollsters are missing right now?
I think a couple things. Number one, I think the messaging is really clear on the dichotomization of where we stand. So you've got it's not really Republicans versus D anymore. It is now a hard left versus conservatives. And that hard left, when you start pointing out where those people are going, it can be devastating to the Democrats. I mean, tying someone like a Ben McAdams to Nancy Pelosi, he's trying to play moderate, yet he votes with Pelosi 90%+ of the time, which is oddly enough pretty close to where the squad and where they want to get to. So what we're seeing is that messaging resonates. The other thing is what you and I were talking about earlier, and that's this tremendous undercurrent of people who are saying, "What's going on? We can't blame everything on Trump." But we can look and see why are people rioting, what's happening, and who is preventing us from opening schools, etc. And they're seeing the Democrats' fingerprints all over that. And as they do that, I think it gives them gives us an opportunity, if we message this thing right, and we work hard, to have much more success than the media is willing to acknowledge right now.
Wow, that's it. That's an important dynamic. I guess tonight we'll see in the primary too. We've got two squad members in tight primary races. We'll see if even in their own party, the far left gets rejected. It'll be an interesting night to watch that.
Yes.
Well, sir, thank you for all the time you spent with us. I know our listeners here are deeply grateful, and we'll let you get back to work and hope to have you on again before the election.
Yeah, John, thank you so much. Thanks for all you do.
Well, thank you, sir. All right, folks, you've been listening to Congressman Andy Biggs. So grateful he could join us today from the great state of Arizona. We're going to go to a quick commercial break, and we'll wrap things up. Hey, folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653, gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family. All right, folks, that wraps it up. What a great show. So glad that my colleague, Seamus Bruner, the great investigative reporter, the guy that knows how to follow the money from the racial justice movement right to Al Sharpton's very thick wallet, $1 million thick in 2018. Boy, I didn't know the business of racial justice was that good personally for people. And also, big thanks to Congressman Andy Biggs. So much we covered in such a short period of time. Boy, this debate over kids going back to school is a big deal. And you can see this playing out in Congress and politics on the election campaign trail. There are clearly two parties, two views, two approaches to COVID-19. And this election will ultimately resolve which one Americans liked best. Was it the Donald Trump Republican approach that you just heard from Congressman Andy Biggs? Is it the Joe Biden Democratic, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Gretchen Whitmer and all of the Democratic governors? Is it their approach? Gavin Newsom, we can throw in Andrew Cuomo, though I don't think many people want to follow his approach on the nursing homes, given the catastrophic deaths that occurred in New York City's and New York's nursing home community. But so much to learn from these guys. I'm really grateful that you tuned in and that we had a chance to have these discussions. We're going to be following that money. I think Seamus Bruner dropped a big hint that there may be more revelations about the follow the money trail on Al Sharpton. And we're going to keep a close eye on that as we monitor all that's going on in the world today. On Thursday, we hope to be back. We should have an exclusive interview with a whistleblower who worked for Dr. Anthony Fauci. Dr. Jonathan Fishbein raised some very serious allegations about NIH ethics and research ethics back in the 2004-05 timeframe. He was fired. Then Congress went to his rescue, and then he was restored to his job as the chief compliance and ethics officer inside Fauci's empire. He was actually overseeing a series of AIDS studies. You may have heard a little bit about this. I broke this story a couple weeks ago about, I call it the Fauci files. There's a lot in Anthony Fauci's background unrelated to COVID-19 that has raised alarm or concern in the past. And Dr. Fishbein is here to talk about that. You don't want to miss that show. We'll be back on Thursday with that, plus a whole lot more from the great investigative reporting at Just the News. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting our sponsors. If you're bored, you're sitting at home, you're waddling through the tropical storm that's soaking America right now, well, make a quick run by jtnshop.com. That's the new Just the News store. We've got great gifts. I just bought these new AirPods from them. They're like one-fifth the price of what I paid for my Apple iPods or AirPods. They work just as great. They're as comfortable in the ears. They've got great sound. If you're looking for a cheaper way to pop in earphones and listen to your music or talk to your family, I think I got them for like $49. It's insane. What a great price. Check out all the things. We still got our book, Fallout. You can still get an autographed copy. It's not too late. And you can join our last session, our last Q&A session. I believe it's coming up later this week. A couple things to do. There's also lobster. If you feel like having a lobster and crab leg dinner at home because you aren't going out to the restaurants this weekend, well, we got that for you as well. So many great items to check out. Clean Phone Pro. I use that all the time, every day. My phone goes in there. I sterilize the germs with the UV light. Makes me feel a lot more comfortable because I spend, as you can imagine, a lot of time like you do on your phones, texting, filing stories, talking to sources. Well, maybe you don't talk to sources, but I do. I'm so lucky to have that device. It just gives me a peace of mind. I don't worry about any germs when I've set it down on the counter or or carry it with me in the office. So lots of things. Just go to jtnshop.com. That's real easy to remember, jtnshop.com. All sorts of great items. Get a gift for yourself. Get a gift for your family members. Buy some stuff for the office. There's hand sanitizers and masks. We're so lucky to have this store. People are buying from it. And every time you do, a certain percentage of the sales comes back to Just the News to support our reporting, to support this podcast. So little tidbit there. All right, we'll be back on Thursday. Dr. Jonathan Fishbein, the whistleblower who blew the whistle on Anthony Fauci a couple of decades ago. He has some strong thoughts about some of the problems that may have persisted back from that era all the way into the COVID-19 crisis we're in now. So you're not going to want to miss that. Plus, we'll have some more scoopy breaking news. I wouldn't be surprised if you heard the name Preet Bharara coming up. Hint, hint. He's that former U.S. attorney in New York. Does a lot of opining on Twitter. Sounds a lot like James Comey. Well, we've got some new news about his office and its conduct. We may have that in time for Thursday. So stay tuned. We'll be right back to you on Thursday. Until then, be safe. Check out JTN Shop. Check out Just the News for your breaking news of the day. And we'll see you on Thursday. Thanks. Hey, folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653 or gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust. And the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy. And most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%.